Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. It is Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Line. Hey, wait a minute. Every time I hear this music, I think about going to Europe. I guess we've been at Europe through much of the day today, and we're going to focus on that as well in this program. That, of course, is the theme music to Rick Steves' show on PBS and elsewhere, just about everywhere on the Internet. Steves is the guy to go to when it comes to speaking about travel, especially travel to Europe. And he joins us on a phone line now. Rick Steves, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you, Steve. Nice to be with you.
Yeah, we've spoken a couple times before, and I'm just a huge fan of yours, as a lot of people are, so I appreciate you joining us today. So, you just heard the business report. Everyone's talking about the stocks and the trade agreements and all of that. You know the people of Europe, and I just wonder what your reaction is and what you think they might be reacting, how they might be reacting at various parts of the continent to the Brexit vote.
Well, you can look at the maps within the United Kingdom and see what regions voted for Europe and what regions voted against it. And it's similar to the dynamic going on in the United States, with big cities being a little more global and open to, dealing with the rest of the world, and smaller towns and more rural areas and Rust Belt areas a little bit more threatened by globalization. And, you know, there's understandable reasons on both ends. I think it's important to remember Europe is not part of the continent physically. There's the English Channel, which has been really good at stopping invasions. I think the last invasion they had was 1066, when the Normans came over about 1,000 years ago. But in the last generation, there's been an invasion, not military, but with, regulations and rules and free trade and immigration, and they stopped it not with bullets, but with ballots.
Do you think Scotland will go now? I know 62% of the Scots voted to stay with the EU. Yep. They say they're going to vote again.
Well, if they had known the outcome of this when they recently voted whether they wanted to stay with the UK or not, I would imagine they would have gone to break from the EU, or to break from the UK.
Right.
And now with this change, I don't blame the people who wanted Scotland to have its break from the UK to bring that up again. And another interesting point is, suddenly North Ireland has, you could say, more in common with the Republic of Ireland,
right,
than it has with London, which is a wild idea. But and then France will be emboldened to think that, if Europe is unraveling, it'll empower their populist crowd and their nativists and so on. And it's very easy for people to overreact to the refugee quote problem. Nations have to decide, do you want to be open to the world or do you want to suffer the economic cost of not cooperating with the rest of the world from a global trade point of view and raise your walls? But in England, they just pulled up the drawbridge.
You know, Rick, I brought a group to Northern Ireland a couple of years ago, and they were very proud of the fact about the border going back and forth. Now, I know a lot of that has to do with the political easings on Ireland, but with Britain leaving the EU, is that going to sort of tighten up going back and forth from Northern Ireland to the Republic?
Yeah. Now the borders are going to have a little more consequence to watch trade as much as anything else, I think. Now there's a real border between the Republic and Ireland, whereas before, as if they were both in the EU, there'd be less need for that kind of customs work.
I don't know if you remember, there was a book probably 10 years ago or so by T.R. Reid. It was called The United States of Europe.
And I love that book, yeah.
I did too. I'm glad to hear that. I was having a text message fight with my best friend today because he didn't. And he thinks that this proves maybe that book was wrong. But I wondered, tell me about the rest of Europe. I mean, I heard it from a German journalist today who said she was crying in the shower this morning to this news. And
yeah.
I'm just wondering how you think everyone else will be reacting to it.
Well, the book you mentioned was very impactful in my view of Europe. And, of course, I'm a travel writer and a tour guide, and I've spent 4 months a year in Europe for the last 30 years. And I just travel around and love its history, love its art. And from a travel point of view, Europe is no different now than it was yesterday. I mean, it's all essentially the same for us. It's just, is this a good move for Britain or not? And what are the long-term impacts on the remaining 27 countries in the EU? But I take the same viewpoint as the author of that book, in that after World War II, futurists got together. Imagine 1947 in the rubble of a bombed-out continent, caring citizens of Europe thought, we've got to do something dramatic or our children are going to be digging out again. Twice in their lifetime, they had suffered a world war, and they thought, we got to weave our economies together. And that's what they set out to do, and essentially weaving the economies of Germany and France together so a war would be inconceivable between those two bickering powers. And then 70 years later, they've done that. Now, it's been really good to have a free trade zone to compete with emerging economies like China and a big free trade zone called the United States of America. But the fundamental accomplishment of the European Union, and it's been a stuttering, inelegant kind of evolution for 70 years, is to weave the economies together so a war is inconceivable in Europe. And for me, that's the big success of the European Union. And the rest of it is finding a good way to, you know, manage your trade and have the economy of scale. So, and so
I know you've got about 20,000 passengers who go with you on trips to Europe each year. Not too bad. I got a little fledgling business called Steve Bertrand Travel as well. Don't look over your shoulder there, Steve, Rick.
Okay. Well, I'm heading off in on Sunday. I'm flying to Vienna, and I can hardly wait to get back over there. I spend, as I said, 4 months a year, every year, working on my guidebooks and making our public television TV show, and it's just really important that we understand the other 96% of humanity, and this is a rough and tumble age. There are a lot of there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of challenges, and this world is getting smaller. And we got to decide: do we want to build walls or do we want to build bridges? That's a kind of a fundamental decision when dealing with the global economy.
Well, you'll see there. I'm going to be in Vienna in about 10 days, so that would be pretty cool. But what I wanted to ask you about was, I have seen some of the trips that I've been working on going to the continent have been, there's been a little less enthusiasm for them this year. Ireland has been red hot. And I just wonder if you see that and if you think that might be about the fears over terrorism.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. We're doing about the same as we did last year. This year we're taking 900 groups on 20,000 people on 900 tours. And we did the same last year. But it's a fragile sort of atmosphere, and there's a lot of people that are nervous. The news tends to make things scary for a lot of people.
What do you tell those people who are nervous? What do you say to them?
Well, I say you got to be careful not to confuse fear and risk. It's understandable that we would be fearful because news makes us fearful because news has to sell ads and they need to make everything a crisis and make it exciting. So news is in a sense entertainment when you think of news having to have ratings and this sort of thing.
Sure.
And I just think it's important that it doesn't mess up our ability to keep a grip on what is dangerous and what is reckless. I think anybody who knows the statistics knows if you go to Europe, you're safer than if you stay at home. Now, when I was starting to travel, people said bon voyage. Now they say have a safe trip.
Yeah.
And I'm inclined to say have a safe stay at home, because if you care about your loved ones and you knew the statistics, you'd take them to Europe tomorrow because it's safer over there than it is here in the United States. But I don't think the risks are significant anyways. We've got 12 million people going to Europe every year and 12 million come back. And I just think it's, if you really care about safety and national security, the most important thing is to travel, not to burrow down at home, but to get out there and gain an empathy for people outside of our border, because we got to play ball with the world. And I just love doing that. And for me, Europe is a springboard for world exploration.
I know that's a big theme of yours, and the fact that we need to learn how other people live and we need to meet other people in order to make it a better world for us. Well, look, I'm going to Prague and Vienna. I've got my pocket guide, my Rick Steves pocket guide to Vienna and Prague. I got my bigger book, Vienna. I've downloaded my walking tours from ricksteves.com, so I'm all set.
Steve, you're all set. I hope you have a great time, and thanks for letting me travel with you. And I'll be over there making sure our editions are right up to date for next year.
Wonderful to talk to you. Thanks very much.
Take care. Happy travels.
That's Rick Steves. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. It's 12:23. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. All right, that was Rick Steves talking about maybe the heart and soul a little bit of Europe. Let's talk about cold, hard cash investments and things such as that. Steven Esposito is a senior vice president and wealth advisor with Morgan Stanley. His office is up in Lake Forest, and he joins us now on a phone line. Steven, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Well, thank you for having me.
So I would imagine you spent much of your day today holding hands of people who have investments with you. I mean, this is a day where you might almost need bedside manner.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's one of those days you need to get out there and communicate and make sure people understand what's going on, because that uncertainty breeds fear, which breeds more selling. And I haven't been in that position to be. I've been selling anything today at all. In fact, I'm looking to buy some bargains. I think this is today and maybe next week will be some opportunities to deploy some capital that's been waiting to be deployed.
So what do you tell people when they call you and say, what's going on with my money?
They're more confused. A lot of people really don't understand what the whole Brexit situation is. And
I think that was true in England, too.
Exactly. I agree with you wholeheartedly. People, just because they voted on it yesterday doesn't mean anything changes tomorrow. And there's just too much volatility right now because of uncertainty and what it really is going to mean. But number one, it's not a binding agreement. The Parliament can do whatever it wants. And it's going to take about 2 or 3 years to work this out. So this type of a reaction, this severely, this quickly in 12 hours, of course, is what we've become accustomed to. That's the market now. The volatility, algorithmic trading creates this, and it's not, I don't think it's your average investor at all.
Well, I was going to say, it's almost like New Year's Day, right? This is how we started the year trading.
We had the worst year, start of the year, the first 10 days or 2 weeks, was the worst start to the stock market in the history of the stock market. And yet I think we'd all agree the economy and what's going on in the world isn't the worst it's ever been since the exchanges opened.
Although there will be an impact, right? I mean, they're talking about maybe an impact on GDP. There will be less trade, perhaps, with England. I saw one statistic that said this Brexit could amount to a 0.2 point increase in unemployment in the United States. So, I mean, there will be a real impact on this down the road.
It's possible. Again, it's all speculation right now. 12 hours ago, the polls and told us that it was done. The Brexit wasn't going to happen. So you've got a lot of people with a lot of microphones all over the world and on the Internet telling people what's going to happen. We just don't know. Could it happen? Sure. But is 0.2 that big of a deal? In the whole scheme of things, I don't know. I mean, there's a question as to whether or not the unemployment is really where it is to begin with.
Do you think that the U.S. could come out better with this?
I think, common sense would dictate that if you're overseas and you're afraid, money will go to the United States where it's better treated, where they feel it's safer.
So what are you advising people to do today?
Calm down.
Let me go ahead. Tell me again. What are you telling people to say today?
Just calm down. Don't make some rash decisions before the weekend. Take some time off over the weekend and just, take a deep breath. Look at your portfolio. If you have a lot of cash, you should have some cash in your portfolio looking for opportunities. Get ready to deploy it over the next week or so and have a long-term approach. Don't let the volatility affect you. The value of businesses hasn't changed that much where you can see a 10% change in the value of a multi-billion-dollar company because of a vote in Britain.
I've been talking a little too much about my own personal travels. I don't mean to bore people, but I'm going to go to the bank and buy a few pounds today. It's going to work out for me.
Yeah, it's at a 30-year low. So, I mean, one would say that could work out if you plan on traveling there.
And so then that's what you're telling people today. What are you telling them that they should be planning for 6 months from now or a year from now? Anything different given this vote?
Right now, no. I mean, again, we really don't know enough information to make big decisions as it stands right now. We know it's going to change. It might be a good thing in the long run. We just don't know that, depending on who you talk to. I think the vote came in 52-48 to leave. That's not exactly a landslide. So that could change if things become uncomfortable for Britain down the road. You never know. The people may change their mind. A new parliament comes in. They may change it. They may negotiate a good deal with the rest of the EU. So to assume and extrapolate everything out for the next 10 years is kind of silly. I remember Ebola was going to take down the world economically. I'm waiting for Greece still to go bankrupt for 7 years now. So we just don't want to act irrationally.
You are so far behind. It's the Zika virus, Stephen. It's the Zika virus.
Is that what's causing this drop-off? Because it could be.
Look,
we'll find something tomorrow for something new.
Nice to talk to you. I'm glad you could join us today. Thanks very much. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It is 12:36 on a Friday afternoon. It's time to start thinking about where you're going to go for brunch. And George Tsoukalos has one idea for you. The founder, the creator, the man behind Belly Up Smokehouse. George, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you for having me.
Right, brunch is new for you guys, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we just started about 3 weeks ago.
All right, how's it going?
Very well so far. That whole area is just like brunch crazy.
The whole area is the South Loop, correct?
That's correct.
So I'm interested in the idea of restaurants, how you come up with the idea, what comes first, chicken or egg, and anything like that. It seems like in this story, it was all about geography.
It was. I've lived in the South Loop for 13 years, so I figured we needed something more diverse. We've got fantastic bars, pizza, burgers, stuff like that. Barbecue's been a hobby of mine for quite some time, and just all fit together.
So was it the idea that I want to open up a South Loop restaurant, what would work there, or I want to open up a smokehouse, where could it work?
Both. Yeah. I think everything just fell into place really quickly. I passed by the location. I saw this beautiful garage door looking at me, and I'm like, what a great spot for my concept. And it just was perfect that it's four blocks away from my house as well.
That's a great concept. Well, you're in the 1100 block of South Wabash, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so we can come visit you in the 1500 block of South Wabash, is that what you're telling us?
18.
That's not too far. And the other thing is, and this interests me, I mean, if you had told me when I came to the city, or even 20 years ago, 10 years ago, that there would be room for a honky-tonk or country music south of the Loop in Chicago, I'd have thought you were crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it's first of all, country music has become so popular. I mean, look at Garth Brooks. When he came out of retirement, he did 11 shows in Chicago before he went anywhere else.
Sure.
You know, and we just finished Lake Shake, which was down the street. Windy City Smokeout is coming next month. You know, I mean, it's just, it's everywhere.
So there will be country music at the restaurant?
Yeah, there will be.
I wanted to call it a bar. It's not.
No, it's more of a restaurant than a bar. I mean, we just put the saloon because, you know, it's
just
country
for the feel
western.
Of it?
Yeah, exactly. We do have a beautiful bar, but we'll have live entertainment Thursday, Friday, Saturday evenings, and Saturday, Sunday brunches as well.
Okay, and so are you a country music fan?
I am.
Are you?
Very much so. For a Greek boy, you know.
I was going to say, tell me about the Greek boyness, because you've got restaurants in your blood, right?
Yeah, my father started off in Greektown when he first immigrated to Chicago in the early 70s at a place called Roditis. He was a waiter. He became manager and then part owner. He retired by 92, and then in 96, we opened up right next door to Athena,
right,
which we had for 17 years until he decided to retire again for a couple of years ago.
And so were you one of those guys in the kitchen? Or
I have been everywhere. I've been pastry chef, sous chef, a bartender, waiter, manager, valet.
Right.
You name it, I can do it.
So I'm interested into what, you know, I talked to a lot of writers or different people. We had a couple of artists in here yesterday. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with a lot of people, there's sort of a moment that is this is why I do it. You know, maybe with an author, it's seeing your book on a shelf, or an artist, you see something in a museum. For a restaurant guy, for a restaurant rat, other than it's something that you've always known, what is it that gives you the biggest payoff?
It's just seeing the families. Like I said, we were at Athena for 17 years. I've seen couples have their first date, get married, do their rehearsal dinners there, have their kids' baptisms there. It's just, you become part of that family, and seeing all these people grow up in front of your eyes, it's just so, it's rewarding, it's fulfilling to see people enjoying what you've brought them.
It's like mom.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you brought so much food in here. so much food in here. And you said, well, I'm Greek, that's what I do. And I almost was going to say to you, no, that's what moms do.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same thing.
Well, mom taught us, you know, I mean, in the kitchen, she'd always be slaving away. She would never let us help because that was a woman's job. But, you know, we always picked up here and there and, you know, just following in our dad's footsteps.
When do you know, so you've had success opening restaurants, keeping them open. This one opened a few months ago.
Right.
First, what are the most critical months? First 6 months, first 9 months?
Yeah. I mean, if you're solvent after the first year, you're doing well. There's going to be hiccups here and there. But you have to believe in the product that you're giving. You have to dedicate a lot of time. I mean, my wife knows that she comes second to the business because I have to make sure that everything goes well.
Luckily, she can only walk 6 blocks to tell you.
Exactly.
My question then is, how do you know when you've made it, when you've turned that corner and it's going to be okay?
You really never know. I mean,
really?
You have to be on anybody that like steps back a little bit. You know, you're headed for disaster. I don't care what your name is or who you are. You know, you can ask the Melmans the same thing. They are on top of their game constantly because there are so many selections to choose from in Chicago. And now with, you know, the media and Yelp and all that, if you're not on your game, you know, you're headed for disaster.
What do you think of Yelp?
It's good and bad. I mean, it's fantastic, you know, that you can find out reviews, but, I mean, everybody's become a food critic, too. And there's some people that really don't deserve to be on it, but everybody's got their own opinion.
Let me ask you it a different way, then. Has Yelp made your restaurant better?
Yes, it has.
It has.
Definitely.
In what way?
Because I'm constantly... rather than somebody that might be shy to tell me what they've thought of their experience, they're not shy to post about it. And I look at my Yelp ratings and my reviews.
That's not healthy, George.
Constantly. Yeah. But it's my obsession. That's what's going to make me successful in life. If I don't take it, first of all, you have to take it with a grain of salt, you know, because, again, some people might like sweet barbecue rather than smoky, you know. Everybody's got their own tastes and opinions. I'm not going to change my menu just because of one review.
How many would it take? No, I'm just kidding. So, but because, you know, we get texts here, and I often check the text during
Certainly.
The show, and, you know, some of them are very helpful. Some of them are fun.
Sure.
Many of them are very mean. Many of them have no interest in helping your restaurant or
yeah.
the show, and you have got to figure out how to read those and maintain your mental health. And because I know Yelp can be a real problem that way.
Sure, and you know it bothers me sometimes. I try to, like, you know, brush it to the side, but you know, this is my. I try to tell people, hey, I invested all this money in my own community to bring you something that you've been waiting for, you know. And if there's something wrong, please tell me, and I'll try to fix it. Don't go off bashing me on Yelp or any other social media.
George Tsoukalos is the guy behind Belly Up. It's on the South Wabash in the South Loop. Tell me a little bit about the restaurant, because it smells delicious.
I love the fact that it's very comforting, and it's all exposed brick, wood. I wanted to bring a casual feel to it. Very family friendly. There's so many kids in that neighborhood now. And
That's
they
amazing,
all,
isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, and I've seen it progress in the 13 years that I've lived there. But you see all these kids, and they come in after like 5:30 with their parents. They're coming off of work, and they all know each other, and it's great, you know. And now they're starting to know me, and I'm like Uncle George.
You know, that's interesting. That was inevitable, right?
Yeah.
A Greek guy would have become Uncle George eventually. but you know, you didn't think of those of a restaurant like yours in the older days of being the community spot. They were more the diner sorts of things, right?
Yeah,
you're a little more upscale than
oh,
that.
Oh yes,
not,
definitely.
Not very upscale, but
competitive. Very nice prices.
Sure.
Very nice,
absolutely.
You know, atmosphere.
Absolutely. But what I mean by that is that we've changed the way we go out and eat.
Certainly.
And so now restaurants like yours have become the gathering place, the neighborhood place.
And that's what it is. My customers are 95% locals, and it just blows up, you know, whenever there's an event at Soldier Field, at Northerly Island, at
right.
you know, Grand Park, because it's the logistics.
Well, I wish you great success, George Tsoukalos. How do people find out more about the restaurant?
You can visit us at bellyupchicago.com. We do offer delivery now as well.
You're damn right.
Large portions.
Yeah, okay. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you. Thank you for having me.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. I don't know. Michael Heidemann is bumping here with Mr. Sunshine. There's no sunshine from Steve Alexander today as he watches the business.
Why give you your sunshine?
You did give me?
Yeah, the pound and the euro are lower.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So for those of you going to Europe like you, there you go.
It's true, and I am going to go to the bank, maybe pick up a few pounds today. I'm going to pick up a few pounds here after the food from Belly Up arrived. Okay, we're going to switch gears here. Gus Porter is in the studio. He's the CEO of WGN Flag Company. That's right, WGN Flag Company. You see the signs around. They've been around, Gus, 3, 4, 5 years? How old are you guys now?
100 years.
100 years, and you're just celebrating your anniversary. I was telling you off the air that I know I saw the notice of the celebration, and I was saying, you know, we got to have these guys on just because it's interesting. You've been around 100 years, what you do, and the WGN connection. I thought it'd be a great fit. And then I'm not kidding you. A few days later, I'm reading a commercial for you by complete coincidence. So it's great that you're here.
Well, we like to get in people's heads.
And you do that. How different is the company today than it was 100 years ago?
Well, other than the fact that we still sell and make flags, I would say it's probably
right.
a completely different company. We focus a lot now on custom product. I mean, the technology has changed so much. You know, we're looking at digitally printed flags and things like that instead of everything all hand-sewn. Things like silk screening are now a thing of the past, where now everything just kind of gets printed directly to fabric. We still do our own applique in-house, and we've got some of the most skilled seamstresses in the entire world
really?
For us.
How many companies are there like yours around the country?
Around the country, there's only a handful. We really don't have an exact number, but somewhere around 1,000 across the whole country.
Right. So I was kidding earlier. Could you make me an EU flag? Because I think the European Union could use some cheering up today. I'll fly it in front of my house.
Well, I think we might have to remove a star from it now.
Yeah, that's true. That could be a problem, wouldn't it? Primarily a B2B business?
We work with the public on a daily basis. We do lots of work for churches, residents, anybody who wants to fly a flag. A majority of our business is corporations and buildings downtown or within the Chicagoland area.
And so, I mean, is it just making flags? You do flag repair? What else do you do?
We do flagpole maintenance, repair. We sell flagpoles, install flagpoles. Really anything having to do with flags from start to finish, we take care of it.
Is it a challenge? I mean, because obviously you said things have changed so much over 100 years, and this is a pretty niche business. I mean, how you doing?
Well, we're hanging in there. You know, if we've hung around this long, you know, hopefully we've
right.
got a little bit more life left in us. But things are actually going pretty well. It's been a very nice year for us. People have kind of recognized the 100 years and have been paying attention to us. We've been trying to do a little bit more with advertising and marketing, kind of refresh our name out there. You know, some people might have forgotten after the past 100 years, who they're supposed to call.
Where does the I remember I called them 98 years ago. I don't know that many people like that. Where does WGN come from?
It was actually my great-grandfather, William George Newbold.
No kidding.
Yep. He bought a flag from a street vendor, walked down the street, sold it for twice what he paid for it, and said, hey, I got an idea. Let's start up a flag company.
And was he doing that on the southeast side, too?
We have been in the same location all these 100 years.
What's your location?
We're at 7984 South South Chicago Avenue.
And so people have seen your work.
People have seen our work everywhere. Pretty much you look outside on most buildings downtown, you'll see one of our flags flying. You watch a Bulls or Blackhawks game, you'll see our championship banners hanging in the
United
Center.
So you make the championship banners?
Yes, we make all the championship banners and the retirement banners in the United
Center. How does that work when you make a championship banner? I mean, does someone present you with the design, or how does that happen?
Well, actually, the Blackhawks design, the original design, was actually my father's idea. When they built the United Center, they decided that they were going to do something brand new. They had the state-of-the-art stadium, so let's, kind of revamp the banners a little bit. So my dad sat there with a piece of paper, just kind of drew out a little something. Old man Wirtz looked at it, and he said, I want it. And so we, kind of designed it for him, and I would say probably 2 days later, all of a sudden the Bulls called, well, if they've got the trophy on their banner, we want the trophy on our banner. So there we go.
So when people see those banners at the United Center with the trophies on them, that was your dad's idea?
That was my dad's idea.
White Sox banner?
We do all the flags for White Sox, and we do all the decorations around the park.
So clearly the big question then is, what's the Cubs banner going to look like?
Well, I don't know. The Cubs always had a problem and, kind of use other vendors. So,
enough about them. That's
nobody's
okay.
Perfect.
All right. Well, we don't have to dwell on them then. Well, if people are listening now and you want to sort of tell them in a nutshell what you do or what you might be able to do for them, what would you tell them?
Well, WGN can provide the best quality flags, banners, flagpoles, and flagpole repair that you'll find anywhere. You'll have excellent customer service and just a wonderful product and be a part of history.
I'm glad you're in, because I love talking to companies or businesses that have been a real part of, and I was going to say fabric of Chicago, and I didn't mean it quite as a pun, but, just part of the neighborhood, part of the southeast side for all these years. So thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
I wish you great success for the next 100 years.
Thank you. I hope to be around at least for most of them.
It's the business. Good luck with that.
Thank you.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.